Hey, welcome back. It is I, Daniel Hardy, also known as the Gold-Blooded King, and I'm live on the air, even though by the time you hear it, it will be in podcast form. And I'm with the good Dr. Thomas Bevilacqua. Good sir, how are you doing today?
I'm good. We're celebrating an anniversary today. I believe this will all sound familiar. It sounded a little something like this.
A timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry. Way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry! With 6/10 of a second remaining.
Happy anniversary to Steph Curry making that shot 4 years ago on this very day.
Do you know what today is? It's our anniversary. That's when KD knew he was leaving Russell Westbrook. Anyway, today really cool day for us because we get to celebrate one of the greatest shots in basketball history, and especially in Warriors history, where Steph Curry in overtime pulls up from what was it, like 45 or some crazy feet,
That's a little, yeah, like 30 something, something in the
30
high
something.
30s.
You know, each year it's going to be longer and longer. He pulled up literally from the parking lot. Just daggered OKC in a game that I mean just straight daggered OKC in a game that was in the middle of the very fiery Warriors Thunder rivalry. Had a lot of MVPs in there and future Hall of Famers in there.
And Russell Westbrook.
I knew you were gonna do it. I knew you were gonna do it. I was waiting for it. So that's pretty cool. And it's funny, with the legend Steph, the man who was known for that shot and many others, bang, 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 is coming back after missing the majority of the season with a broken hand. And as he's coming back to play for the Warriors, obviously the Dubnation is super excited. It's also giving us a chance to, really reflect on just gratitude. You know what I mean? Like not having Steph and not having Klay, and then you got to think about not having KD and Iguodala. But as far as guys who are on the team still. Not having the Splash Bros handy for the majority of the season has made watching Warriors basketball really an exercise in patience and long suffering. And to have him back brings in an injection of joy back at the franchise and to the fan base. But it also makes us take a look around the league. Obviously, the Warriors aren't in playoff contention right now unless Steph can work his magic.
Oh, that's a lot of man. I believe Steph, as it says, he can do all things, but even that would be that might be a bridge too far. Plus, man, we got all that. We get to think about the draft. We get to watch March Madness with an expert's eye this year. We gotta get ready for that. So
Dude,
no,
that's
I don't want.
absolutely true. I mean, the fact that with March Madness coming up, it's the first time in many years I'm actually going to care about the draft.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I've in the past made a point about n now not watching the draft because I'm like, this is what we had to do. This was the high point of our seasons with the Warriors in the past,
Right.
but now it's like, nah, we're going to the playoffs. I don't have to watch that. I don't have to lower myself for that to that. So now it's like, oh no, yeah, I gotta mark out that time to watch the lottery, to do a little, to actually watch some white dudes brick layups. I mean, watch college basketball.
It's gonna be pretty cool coming up. And at the same time, we're also seeing a lot of the pro teams pivoting for playoff position. Considering Steph's coming back from his injury, we've got a couple other big guys in the East going down with injury. I'm talking about the Philadelphia 76ers with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is out indefinitely with a back injury, and we're still waiting on the report for Joel Embiid's shoulder strain. But it's just crazy because the night before he got injured, he had 49 points and was talking about, I'm the best player in the league. And then all of a sudden he goes down with this thing. And I was kind of just flashing back to remembering the days when, I mean, sorry, first of all, let's just talk about that tandem right there. Two giant phenoms who don't seem to fit together right now the way they're playing, with Joel Embiid being a giant who is out there shooting threes because his point guard is also a giant who is inside playing post moves. So I think that with Ben Simmons' complete lack of an outside shot right now, it's just, it's just clogging up the lane. So ill-fitting. And then considering the fact that both these guys have been mortally wounded since their rookie year separately, the fact that they're injured again at this phase of their development process, it's making Philadelphia fans quite nervous, quite anxious. And I was thinking about a time in Warriors history when we had two players who were ill-fitting, and both of them had issues with ankle injuries, one from playing basketball, other from playing mopeds. And, just to think about how important it is to nail that decision going forward for a franchise, obviously, how do you compare or draw parallels from what we as Warriors fans learned from that situation to what Philly's going through now?
Oh, that's a good point, or a good sort of comparison to draw. I think that it's true that they're the fit between Simmons and Embiid. It could at times seem a little odd, a little rough, but I think there was always a way in which, I mean, you would see it every once in a while. You would see, like, I mean, I think I'm going to go back and look if both of them played on Christmas, in that Christmas Day game against Milwaukee. I'm looking box score. There we go. Yes, Simmons and Embiid both played. So they can both play well together. They have. And I mean, and it should be noted, yeah, they played well against this team that is like the best team in the league, in the Bucks, and they beat them on Christmas Day. But I think that whereas with Steph and Monte, there wasn't a way I couldn't envision it working with both of them on the court in the roles that their level of talent commanded. I think there is a way that could happen and could work with Embiid and Simmons.
I'm very interested to hear in this hypothetical, because clearly Sixers coach Brett Brown hasn't figured it out.
Well, I mean, that might be the issue, and I hate to say it, because I believe he's another guy. I think he comes out of the Pop Tree, which is, you know, which means he's just got the endorsement of the greatest mind in basketball. But I do wonder if it comes down to coaching, and it comes down to somebody scheming it up better, because I think because you talked about Simmons is this point guard, but he plays down low and he doesn't have an outside shot. And then Embiid is this big man, but he also has this sort of outside range, I think about this idea of position, kind of positionless basketball. And I think you're maybe seeing, it's not quite the same thing with the Houston fraud kits. I mean, the Rockets, where they've just gone very small. But I think that a coach who can kind of think not so much as like having players in positions, but having sort of roles on the court that a player kind of takes. And so maybe Simmons, yes, you have other players who are playing out kind of that outside game, but you have Simmons as somebody who's maybe playing down low a little bit more than maybe maybe not Embiid, but your other big. I don't know. So I think
Al Horford.
I mean, this also might be the issue. Like I think the Simmons and Embiid aren't the problem, but I think the roster around them needs sort of tweaking, and that because I still, I don't know, I'm, and maybe I'm just like the last guy on this bandwagon, but I think that there is a way in which this should be able to work. Like it should work. There has to be a way to do this, but, and maybe it comes down to the coaching, maybe that is the issue, but I think it almost has more to do with that's on Elton Brand is the GM and the roster he assembled, because it doesn't allow for that kind of thing to happen.
No, I agree. I think with those two heavy anchors there, you really need to have, the perfect team around them, because they command so much of the basketball area that you need to have very, very fluid, flexible pieces to be able to go in between them. Grease the wheel there. I do think it's fascinating that when the two players are apart from each other, I'm talking about games where one of them is hurt. Like, I remember earlier this season, Ben Simmons put on a show against the Lakers. I think it was like the end of January, where the Sixers gave the business to LA. And it was without Embiid, Ben Simmons really, really dominated. And then you have another story. We have Joel Embiid playing without Ben and just crushing the Hawks, dropping 49. And of course, the Hawks aren't the best team in the world by any stretch of the imagination. The best post player is probably Trae Young. But I think it's it's interesting to watch how when they're separate, the teams take on their personalities. When Ben Simmons is playing without Embiid, they're flying up and down the court, playing wide open, where he's just penetrating and dishing out to shooters. But when Embiid's in and Simmons is out, then you play more of an inside-outside game where, you know, Embiid gets the ball and goes to work. And just it, I saw a stat from Tom Haberstroh, Tom Haberstat, where he said that a Joel Embiid post-up is officially, according to the analytics, more efficient than a Trae Young three-pointer. Like, finally, we have a big man who is showing the computers, hey, actually, a dominant big man is actually pretty good to have. And Joel Embiid being that person, and all of a sudden being taken out of the lineup, it's like, okay, do you go with the, you know, 6'10", 6'11", point guard who is like in that kind of like Magic Johnson, LeBron mold of giant man who handles the rock like a small person, and you have him just run wild, but because he flat out refuses to take outside shots and keep the defense honest, okay, so then if you give it to Joel Embiid on the block, how can he operate as a true giant should when Ben Simmons' man is lurking and like the defense is able to choke off these certain lanes? And so I agree, coaching would have to happen there. But I do think it's very interesting when you have two players like that. The amount of coaching that needs to go in there lets you know what an unnatural fit it is. So when we're saying, hey, you're so talented, figure out a way, make it work because you're so talented. But the fit itself is so alien just by the nature of basketball. I mean, the only other place I can look at this and say this would work would have to be the Showtime Lakers. But not only was Magic Johnson that could actually hit a three if he wanted to, you also had a squad like Byron Scott, big game James Worthy. I mean, guys who, when they got the ball, Michael Cooper, who were going to do something with it.
The splash father, Michael Thompson.
Michael Thompson, you know what I mean? Like, real hoopers. Jamal Wilkes, I'm just going to list them. There's a million of them. Who's the dude with the goggles? Kurt Rambis.
Bob McAdoo.
In case there's any Laker fans out there questioning some of our knowledge, we have the NBA 2K. We put the classic teams.
Hey, man, I watched that Celtics Lakers documentary.
Good documentary. Good documentary.
Larry Bird's sucked.
That's what Ice Cube said. With that in mind, I'm just saying this fit, compounded by the injuries, guess there's less time for them to get familiar with each other.
Yeah.
I do wonder if the things happen the way they do in the NBA, where we see like powerful tandems don't often stay together. You know, the Splash Bros and Michael and Scotty are more the exceptions to the rule than the rule nowadays. When you look at that, are you thinking to yourself, okay, if I had to pick one, I got to go with this guy, even though in retrospect, it may look something like, you know, Shaq and Penny or, maybe KD and Russ or Harden.
Ooh, that's damn. So you said like, if you pick one, or who would you pick to build around in Embiid or Simmons?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shoot. I don't. It's funny because there are these issues of fit, but also it's like they both have the. I mean, you know, when you outline them, they're both kind of they're. I don't want to say imperfect player. No player is perfect, but I just look and there's something where I'm like, I don't know about that because my instant. Instinct is Embiid. I think you should build around Embiid. But I think there are legitimate questions about his longevity that, like, to the point where maybe having Simmons and him having a little, I don't know, not better track record, but is sort of a better bill of health, relatively speaking, maybe that is more important to have. I don't know. So that's what makes it such a tough if you ask me KD, Russ, or Harden, I think we all know who any sane person would take. You know, with this, it's not in a way that even the, like, you talk about Shaq and Penny. Like, yeah, you take Shaq every time. Like, you just do. But this one, I don't know. And, you know, like I say, my instinct is Embiid, but there's part of it, there's enough there that gives me pause to not make it like not feel very confident in that decision or that choice.
I could definitely do that. Looking at them and thinking about the fit where, you know, there is a chance because they're so young that Ben Simmons does improve in certain shooting areas and it just makes the game more natural. Or of course, if their coach can really come up with something or there's a better roster fit around them. So there are some variables there that it'd be a shame to not try out before you make a decision there. So I completely agree with that. There's still plenty of time and hell, they could do it this year if they're healthy. So yeah. I'm not saying blow it up, but it just seems like it seems a little uneasy. Not mostly perhaps, but more just in the basketball fit.
I think you look at theirs like that. You're talking about the schedule. They just, you know, in the month of February, beat the Clippers with both Simmons and Embiid playing, and the Clippers had Kawhi and Paul George. So I think what you look at that game, I mean, it's this thing again where it's about the other pieces, because the key to that game, I'm going to bring up like a single game plus minus, and I know someone with a spreadsheet is going to tell me why that's such a flawed statistic, but Josh Richardson was a plus 24 and went 3 for 5 from 3-point range. Like it's about that third thing. It's about the pieces that complement those two players. I think if there's like a version of Jimmy Butler that wasn't, I'm trying to think of a charitable word, that wasn't so occasionally abrasive. I think that like that kind of player is like, that's what they need. That's what they don't have. I mean, they had him, but it just wasn't going to work. But that kind of that they need that guy, because that sort of opens up everything else. Cause I mean, I think you've pointed this out in the past. Look, they got to a seventh game against the eventual champs, and right. It took a miracle shot for the Raptors to win that game in regulation. So
right.
I think it kind of comes down to, as kind of exciting as it was to think about this team of giants, basically the roster composition. And the way they built it, like that's maybe even more than the coaching. This is where like the problem is, and they need to do a better job of getting pieces around these two players who really complement them. And that's not that's true of all players. Like, you know, it took Steph and Klay to play together before both of them kind of reached the heights of their potential. That is almost more the issue to me than either Simmons or Embiid.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
And considering the idea of the fit and the players around them, I think the Warriors just dodged one of those concerns when they traded D'Angelo Russell for Andrew Wiggins, because obviously they were thinking the Splash Bros plus D'Lo might be a bit redundant and weak on defense. And in Philly's case, you know that you should have a pretty good defense, hypothetically, if you have Simmons and Embiid on the court with their size and athleticism. So I guess we can see how the different factors affect how we feel about the fits. And the fit of Andrew Wiggins going forward, I can't wait to see how he fits with Steph. I think that hearing Steph say that Wiggins was one of the people who picked up the offense the fastest, if not the fastest, and hearing about that is a good indicator of Steph's confidence in his new teammate's ball IQ. And if your point guard is that encouraging and that impressed with you that fast, I mean, it bodes well. We know that Steph, above all things, is an artist. on the basketball court. So if you let a master painter like that have a new brush to play with, I think you're looking at a situation where Andrew Wiggins' greatest ceiling has an opportunity to be unlocked. And it'll be very interesting to see if, like, let's say the experiment doesn't work and we say, dang, like, you know, Andrew Wiggins never quite fit in. Well, we've had another small forward who didn't quite fit in. His name was Harrison Barnes. And he didn't quite fit in only because he couldn't knock down open jump shots when we needed the most. He could play defense. He could dunk the ball when we needed to. And we only needed, you know what, 10, 12 points a game, 15 points a game from him a lot of times. If he got 20, it was a miracle. We were happy with it.
Just couldn't do it in the finals. Right.
In the finals would have helped. Overall, the Harrison Barnes experience was cool, you know. It was fine. It was definitely like a well-made peanut butter and jelly sandwich, you know what I mean? Like, if, you know, you come by with some hot pastrami on rye, a.k.a. Kevin Durant, yeah, I'm going to switch it up. But if that rye isn't there, give me the PMBJ. And I know we're so excited to get, you know, possibly Giannis in the future. But as far as a good, sturdy, small forward who fits the role, has the length to compete defensively, and can pick up the offense, isn't a ball hog, and you give him the greatest point guard of this generation, and, you know, definitely in the top three of all time as far as point guards go, I'm very fascinated to see how Wiggins is going to look. We've seen it with Kai Bowman and Jordan Poole. How does it look with Steph?
Yeah, I mean, that's the key. And I mean, if we're thinking about what is exciting about Steph coming back, besides having him on the court and that, you know, it makes the game more entertaining, I think it is to see how Wiggins plays and how he responds to playing with Steph. Because if you look at Wiggins's numbers since he's been with the Warriors, and admittedly it's a small sample size, it is a very small sample size, but some of his, the more, you know, I'm looking at some of the more advanced numbers, especially like the off the plus minus, at the offensive box plus minus and defensive, and that he's better, Larry. He's stepped up with this team, so he is not, you know, so he has something to offer. And you look at who he's played with in the past, and I'm not a big Carl Anthony Towns fan. I don't think he's that, like, that great. But I think in terms of players who make other players look better and play better and help them enhance their game, you could see how playing with Steph will be, that would be the case with him, that he would allow him to sort of level up. And that's kind of, yeah, like, you think about that, you know, whether it's because Steph is going to command so much more attention, it's going to pull people out to 3-point range, so Wiggins can attack the basket more. That's the thing I'm curious about, to get this peak of, like, okay, can this guy, you know, he's not going to be in the KD role, but can he be Harrison Barnes? Can he be that, like, solid, steady, the wing kind of second or third option, but who fits into the system? Because if he can, because they just didn't have that when you had Russell on the roster, because, like, he is just not that player. Even if I think maybe they saw that he just wasn't going to work with Steph, him, and Clay, and just that was not, those lineups would not work. But yeah, you want to see if this kind of improved play, albeit in a small sample size, if it goes up another level with Steph. And that would be something that, you know, you don't want to read too much into it. But if we see that, that's going to be a really good sign, because then, you know, remember, hey, they're also bringing Clay back next year, and they're going to have whoever they get with the draft pick. And they're obviously the financial situation, and kind of getting back to something he was talking about with the Sixers, the Warriors will have this financial flexibility, and that will enable them to kind of do a better of like constructing an kind of an actual team. Whereas I think this past offseason, it was just kind of what can they do to fill things out. There wasn't any sense of cohesion. It was just all kind of like, you see this in the getting when they got D'Angelo, just like, oh, well, we can get an asset for him, and this is the smart thing to do. And it absolutely was. But now I think they can go into an offseason trying to really build a cohesive lineup and team rather than just sort of filling in and just trying to get as much as they can.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. And I hope that they are successful, because I cannot do one more year of this kind of basketball. I'm sorry, I'm bougie now. After suffering through all the dark days when I was younger, I need at least the playoffs, man. And when I say the playoffs, I mean at least the Western Conference Finals. I mean, what are we, the Rockets? We can't just settle for anything.
Chris Paul played his whole career to get to one Western Conference Finals.
Yeah. And more power to him. It's just great that we have a guy who – will go in the history books as one of the greatest point guards of all time. And to see Steph Curry get the better of him in multiple playoff series just can only do wonders for Steph's legacy.
Wait, you talked about the best point guards of all time. I assumed you were talking about Steph, because you couldn't be possibly referring to Chris Paul.
See, you can't see you're messing up Steph's legacy, because if we keep telling people how trash these guys are who destroyed, you're going to think Steph's trash. You know what I mean?
We got a problem up. It's like a straw man, which is a straw man with straw hamstrings.
You know, 30 years from now, we're like, Chris Paul was the toughest defender in the history of basketball. So when my kids look at it, like, wow, it's amazing how Steph just tried him. I'm like, yeah, it is amazing. Weird, huh? Anyways, thank you, folks, for listening to Dr. Tom and myself. We're going to be cranking these out with Steph's return, because, hey, we have more to talk about. We look forward to doing some more for you. Dr. Tom, do you have anything for Dub Nation as we take off?
I'm with you. I'm excited to see Steph back on the court. I'm excited to see the tandem of him and Wiggins. I've been enjoying the Andrew Wiggins experience so far. I think he's a good piece, whether it's about the long term or not. But yeah, you take Steph for granted, and it's going to be good to at least have him out there doing Steph things, and we can find a little taste of joy at the end of a season that's been challenging, to say the least.
That's right, and since it is, joyful times, because it's the anniversary of Steph hitting that shot, can you send us out with one more bang from Mike Breen?
All right, yes, I certainly can.
The timeout, decide not to use it, Curry, way downtown. From Curry with 6/10 of a second remaining.
Bang. All right. Have a great day, folks.